The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You're back with Bastards post game. I told myself I wouldn't say that word, and there I went. John Henry flies to Kansas City because he's not putting up with any shit, and then the Bats take a shit. So Red Sox lose in, what was that, the 13th inning, or was it the 12th? I lost count.
I think it was the 12th.
Deep into extras. Yeah, we kind of ran out of pitchers there and went with Newcomb, and can't really put it on him. But let's start on the positive side. Hunter Dobbins, Chris, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Hunter Dobbins was a pleasant surprise in this game. I mean, he went six innings, had six strikeouts. I don't think he even walked anyone, to be honest with you. Got into a couple moments where it looked a little bit of trouble, but there seemed to be some magic. We were able to get that double play. This is the first game I can honestly say felt like a playoff game this season. And we lost, so not shocked. But yeah, pleasantly surprised with Hunter Dobbins.
Jim.
Yeah, I agree with Chris. Very impressed with Dobbins again. He had a little bit of adversity because he wasn't getting any run support. So it was going to be interesting to see how he fared with that. And to his credit, pretty good. 55 strikes, 81 pitches, five hits, six Ks, no walks. A little dicey there a little bit later in the game, but one of the things that caught my eye was the fastball down and into right-handers was money. He was painting the corner pretty well and got a few called strikeouts. And so overall, a good appearance. I'm starting to get sold on him. I usually don't get sold that quickly, but if there are any kind of long-term issues with either Bueller or Fitz or any one of those guys, I don't think I would mind him staying in that rotation permanently.
He had a couple of strikeouts and then he faced Bobby Witt Jr. And I told myself, if he gets Bobby Witt here and he strikes him out, it's going to be a good night. And it was. And I was a little bit surprised he got the hook there, but I think that's when Cora went to Justin Wilson. You know, he wanted the matchup. Or no, I think it was Weissert, rather. And, I might have let him go a little bit, but we didn't know we were going to go 12 innings. And I just wonder with Dobbins, like, it's hard to not be imaginative on how good he could really be. And when you hear about Cutter Crawford possibly coming back here in the next 5 or 6 weeks, I'm starting to think, well, you know, maybe I want Crawford in long relief to start with. Like, who's one guy you automatically want to pull out of this rotation right now? Because I don't think, I mean, Bayo's been somewhat encouraging despite the five walks, Houck has gotten to the point where he's giving you a chance. He's not punching guys out like we want him to. And Crochet is solid. Bueller should be back fairly quick. They didn't anticipate it'd be much longer than the minimum. So we've got a lot of depth that has the potential here to pitch to the level of a number three or a number four.
Yeah, I think with some of those guys coming back, Giolito is the first odd man out for me at this point.
You could be right. I mean, Fitz is only throwing bullpen sessions. And like I said, Crawford's still 5 or 6 weeks out. So, I mean, Giolito has a little bit of time here, but he might not be here at the start of summer.
Yeah, he's got to really have a really good performance in this series, because if he doesn't, after what Dobbins was able to do, I think his leash is going to be very short.
It could be. And if he doesn't make his innings, you don't have to worry about the $14 million option next year vesting. So that's $14 million off the books. And it's just going to be fascinating to see where the payroll ends up, especially if Bregman does opt out, because that's whatever that is. It's not $40 million because of the way they deferred it. But it's still a significant amount of money off the books with, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do with it, you know, but that's a long time from now. My next question is, when does it become appropriate to pinch hit for Trevor Story in the eighth or ninth inning or beyond?
Cause a month ago.
Yeah.
He can't hit fastballs.
Yeah, he hasn't been able to hit fastballs in a long time. It's only getting worse.
He can't take walks. I mean, he makes hard contact when he can finally square up with it. But I just, the way the game ended there in the 12th, you had one out, and then you had Story coming up and Toro coming up. I mean, come on.
I'll give you another question.
Go ahead.
When do we start doing defensive replacements with catchers in the late innings?
That's another conversation. I mean, I'm not going to lie, Narvaez kind of won me over. Yeah. And his blocking, according to Baseball Savant, he's in the 100th percentile. And I'm not nerdy enough to know if multiple players can be in that percentile, but he's there nonetheless. And that ball doesn't get by him. And Middlebrooks was criticizing Wong. He's like, that was a blockable or catchable ball. And he just kind of lazily stuck his glove out and didn't come up with it. It's frustrating. And Wong, I mean, if Cora absolutely has to have his bat in the lineup, and I do think he can heat up at the plate, he could play first in a pinch, I would think.
Yeah, I think the most frustrating part about that, because Middlebrooks was kind of roasting him and saying that it was blockable, but like he barely even attempted to stop it. Like that's the most frustrating part. And like, I know he's the last standing player of the whole Mookie Betts trade, but like I'm ready to just move on. I don't want any remnants of that situation. We've clearly lost that trade. We're never going to win that trade. They've won two World Series. We're not even going to have a player on the roster in another year from now from that situation. So. But now it's to the point where it's actually costing us games, because like I joked about it in the war room, Whitlock, the next pitch, made a harder effort to try and chase a ball down that was about 30 rows deep behind the catcher than Wong did to try and chase a ball that was clearly out of the zone.
Yeah. And then he's winded after that. I'm going to wait around for him.
Yeah. I mean, Wong was 1-for-4 on the night, 3 strikeouts. Trevor Story, 0-for-5, only 1 strikeout. He kept either lining out or flying out. And there was even one at bat where Story was up. It wasn't his last at bat, but it was in the later part of the game where he was up 2-0 in the count. And I'm like, geez, just don't swing, Trevor. Just don't swing the bat. Just take the walk, you know, if you can get there. If it gets to a 2-strike count, then go ahead and take your chances. But I'm like, just get on base. Like, he's giving us nothing. His on base has slipped down to like 293 or something. So I think they're going to have a tough decision to make there. And he's got no trade value at all. That's the crazy thing. We went through the Casas struggles. We're going through the Story struggles right now. I really think Masataka Yoshida can DH against righties and still give you something. I mean, he was number 2 on the roster last year in batting average. He hit .287. Only Jaron Duran was higher. So the guys that can help you aren't even up right now. And I mean, even Meyer in a painful rookie slump, I think is still going to give you more than Trevor Story.
The other thing is can anybody bunt on this team? I mean, seriously. It's the most ridiculous thing. I mean, you have Durant squaring 8,000 times. He can't get the bunt down. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, the fundamentals. You know, Cora talks about fundamentals all the time. We got to play better. We got to be better defensively. You know, and then the offensive side of things, I mean, they just can't bunt. I mean, you can't get – you got to play the small ball a little bit differently, especially in these extra innings. And they're always just about the launch angle and trying to really just blast the ball. And sometimes you got to move the runners over. They just can't do it.
No, and I mean, Duran, you were mentioning that in the war room, and you know, I usually, Duran's a guy I'm confident he stands a good chance to put it in play, but he was 0-for-5 tonight. So the more I thought about it, I'm like, well, you know, you could do it with Duran, and he would actually have a chance to beat it out, depending on how it, you know, how he's able to place it. But
well, you didn't need him. You didn't need him to beat it out. All you needed him to do was just run really fast and hard and force Kansas City's hand. You know, if they try to, you know, make a play quickly and they throw the ball away, and Rafaela scores. You know, so I mean, those are the things that, you know, speed can be a great asset if you use it right. And you know, Cora's got three or four guys on this team that can run really well, and he's not using them the way that they should be.
No, and I mean, if he would have got Rafaela over there, even a fly out, you know, if it's deep enough in the outfield, would have got Rafaela in. So, yeah. So, Devers on the night, which I thought would be interesting, was 1-for-5. And I think it was only a fielder's choice on the run that he drove in, or maybe it was an error, one or the other, but he didn't get credited with a hit there. But not like the worst night for him. I mean, I would have thought maybe 0-for-5 with a few strikeouts based on the way his last 24 hours has been, but I thought he looked fine.
Yeah, I mean, he's 1-for-5, you know, and also got, you know, a little talk from Henry.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and just get into that. So all day long, we're kicking around a million things. Like, this is still all coming at us at 100 miles an hour. At least that's what it feels like to me. And, you know, we're talking about his future. Could he get traded? Chris Rose from John Boy Network, formerly of MLB Network, speculated that he could get traded. You know, maybe Breslow will just see it as an opportunity to free up $30 million a year, kind of get that headache off the roster. And then another John Boy guy, Jake, speculated maybe Dave Dombrowski could end up with him in Philly because they need a third baseman. So the imaginations are running wild. And then maybe an hour before game time, we find out that John Henry, Sam Kennedy, Craig Breslow flew out to Kansas City and had a conversation. So, Chris, you've been a little quiet. How do you read into that?
I mean, I think it's pretty obvious, right? Like, the fact that Henry had to go out there and have a conversation and talk to all the children and try and get them to play nice at this point. Listen, Devers is making a lot of money, and I get, you know, there's two sides to it, right? Like, he's making a lot of money. At some point, it's like, just play the position we need you to play. Number one, we've got a young talent on there and Christian Campbell in the infield with him that we need to grow and be part of the future of this team. And then some prospects that are probably going to come up at some point this season, possibly quicker if this keeps doing what it's doing this season. And I don't think it's a great precedent, an example to set. Not when we're trying to change the culture, not when we're trying to turn the page on an era that we all really want to forget outside of 2021. And I don't know what the outcome is going to be, but I mean, I'm half torn. There's a part of me that's like, if this kind of starts to just keep spiraling, maybe it's best if Devers isn't on the team. But then there's a part of me that's like, well, how good could we, like, we're terrible with him right now. Maybe terrible is not the right word, but we're not good, not meeting expectations. What's it going to be like without him?
Jim, how did you read into the Henry thing?
The way I see it, Daddy came to scold his little boy. That's how I see it. I mean, the bottom line is that these are professional athletes and professional men. And I don't want to hear anything about, it was all over Twitter about, you know, everything was misconstrued. You know, the translations from Spanish were incorrect. Obviously, something was correct enough to force Henry to fire up the plane, spend thousands of dollars to go to Kansas City with Breslow and with Sam Kennedy, and then tell Breslow to just, you know, stay outside and have some popcorn while we go ahead and scold Devers and Cora and whatever else. I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, are these guys 5 years old? The guy's making $300 million. You know, if they want him to play first base, play first base. Don't pout about it. I just think it's just such a bad look. You got the owner going out there and having to scold his little baby. It's such a bad look.
Yeah, I think that the way I read it was, you know, the Red Sox in recent years, the front office has taken a bunch of crap. Henry's taken a bunch of crap. Things kind of got quiet. You know, a lot of the fan base kind of had a little bit of optimism with this team. And I mean, Devers, just with a few quick comments, just set Major League Baseball on fire. Like, you know, from a PR standpoint, you know, the Red Sox, every single podcast today, Buster Olney was giving takes on it. Ken Rosenthal was giving takes on it. Chris Rose on his podcast in the John Boy Network, Baseball Today, was giving takes on it. And I'm sure there were others. Like, it was the number one topic today. MLB Network, MLB Central, which is a show I used to watch before I took my current job. You know, it's a massive story, and it came out of nowhere. I mean, we won the game yesterday, and we won the series, and, you know, ended the homestand on a good note, and Devers makes some comments and everything's upside down. So I think Henry went out there to try to calm him down. I think he realizes that, you know, it's suddenly a circus again, and I don't think he wants that. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm almost impressed that he went out there. I mean, he could have just hung out on his yacht. I think the weather's going to be nice in New England this weekend. But he hopped on a plane and went to probably one of the most boringest regions in the United States. No offense to anyone if they're in Kansas City right now listening to this. But he went out there to address the team. And he was the only one who spoke to Devers. Breslow did not say a word. And I think that's telling. I mean, Breslow's fingerprints, we went through it last night, are all over this. A failure of communication, a failure of leadership, a failure to trade Tristan Casas and just put Devers at first place to begin with. A lot of failure on Breslow's part. So he didn't say a word. It was all Henry. And I think he's just trying to calm everything down. And so we can sort out what we need to sort out. This roster has a lot of problems right now.
Yeah, Terry, to your point, I would have been shocked prior to going into the season if he had flown out there, if there was some sort of turmoil and he had to go out there for whatever the situation being. But, you know, I think, you know, the fact that we spent money and there was a lot of expectation, like, let's face it, as soon as Bregman was signed, like, half of Twitter was photos of John Henry with a cigar in his mouth, right? Whether it was from that night or, like, from 2004, whatever year we won a World Series, insert that year. There was a lot on that. And I'm sure that, like, John Henry's aware of that. He's not stupid. He keeps his finger on the pulse of the team, even if he acts like he doesn't. And I think, to your point, like, now that it's becoming a circus, like, that's not the attention he wants for the Red Sox at this point. Not with the expectations, not with all the them finally getting off the hide with the fans of being absent for the last 4 or 5 years when it comes to spending money and giving a damn about this team. So, yeah, I mean, I wasn't shocked about that. I was shocked that he was the only one that spoke. I mean, that was pretty telling and pretty powerful. It's interesting to see, like, let me ask you a question, both of you, your thoughts. Like, if this were to continue to spiral a little bit, because let's face it, the only thing that's going to fix this is either Devers goes on an absolute tear and it results in winning, or the team's winning and it does in lieu of him and then no one cares. But if it doesn't and it spirals, and this gets even more tumultuous. Do you think, who is Henry going to side with long term? Is it going to be more on the Breslow side, or do you think it's more on the Devers side at this point? Be interesting to hear your thoughts.
I think what it's going to come down to is, I don't think Cora and Breslow are in sync with each other. And I think there's a little bit of friction there. So I think the better question is he going to side with Breslow or is he going to side with Cora? I think Devers falls under Cora. And I pointed out last night, just what, 3 days ago, Alex Cora was asked during his pregame presser if he had talked to Devers about moving to first base. Cora said no, which was a lie at this point because those conversations had already happened. Breslow had already approached them about it. And then they fall. I think this was Sean McAdam asking the questions. He said, are there any plans to talk to Devers about going to first? And he said no. And I was completely wrong on how I read it. I thought Cora simply didn't want Devers to play first. I thought that was a Cora call, but it turned out it was a Breslow call that he wanted that to happen. So when Cora denied talking about him and denied any future plans of talking about him, he was protecting Devers. He was protecting Devers, probably trying to make these questions go away. And then Devers kind of blew it yesterday and the cat was out of the bag. So I think it's going to be Cora versus Breslow long-term. And those are the rumors I'm kind of watching for.
So then who do you think out of those two then?
I think Jim pointed out last night, and I wouldn't have, you know, if Jim didn't, I don't know, and Jim can elaborate here in a second. There was a spirited conversation, let's say, at the winter meetings about whether or not Bregman was a good fit. Cora and Kennedy wanted him. Breslow did not at that time. And so I think Kennedy sides with Cora. I think they're extremely tight. So if Henry has to pick between Cora and Breslow, I think he's going to pick Cora.
There's no question he's going to pick Cora. They love Cora. They brought him back after the cheating scandal. And, of course, when they got rid of Bloom, you know, they had to go through a 16-person interview process before Breslow came around and finally took the job. I mean, they had people in their own cubicles that didn't want the job that said they couldn't, you know, have the time to do it, and all they had to do was switch desks. So, I mean, no one wanted to be the GM of the Red Sox. I mean, this is the Boston Red Sox, and no one wanted to be the general manager, chief baseball operator, whatever you want to call them at this point in 2025. Bottom line, no one wanted the job. So there's no question he'll side with Cora on that.
I posed the question in the war room, and we'll file this one in the extreme hypothetical category for now, but I think the more time goes on, I think Cora will be in Breslow's spot. And it's just a matter of when to me. Breslow probably has somewhere between a 3 and 5 year deal, probably closer to 5. And then I think Cora will get it. But if there's just constant friction there between Breslow and Cora, maybe it happens quicker.
Why didn't it happen already is the question. There was ample opportunity for that to happen. And you wonder why it hasn't happened already.
Yeah, my theory on that is the Red Sox, when they brought Bloom in, that was a bit of a science project because he had never been an executive at that level. And truth be told, I thought the Bloom signing was going to work well when it happened. I thought, man, we're finally going to have some young pitching. You know, I thought the Hunter Dobbins and Richard Fitz guys were going to come along back then, and it never happened. And I think Dave Bush was probably a bad guy to have as the pitching coach. I think that might have screwed things up a bit. But so they kind of went with a non-established guy there. And I think they just got so desperate this time around. They're like, man, this just isn't working. We need an experienced guy. Like, sort of like a Dave Dombrowski guy, but perhaps one that's more oriented with, you know, not blowing up the farm. And nobody wanted it, like you said. I mean, there were some big names on that list. They wanted Chris Antonetti, who is the Guardians' top executive. Then they wanted Derek Falvey. He said no. Kim Ng said no. James Click said no. I know there was one or two other heavy hitters. The Dodgers guy that everybody wanted, Gomes, said no. And so I just don't think Alex Cora was what they wanted at that time. I just don't think they saw it as good timing. And I don't even know if I want it. 5 years from now, I don't know if I want it. But after watching Bloom and now Breslow, I mean, geez. Buster Posey's doing okay. I mean, he's a ex-player manager. I haven't looked at the Giants record lately, but last I checked, they were doing pretty good. But I don't know what the answer is. And for as long as we're sputtering, that there's two ways to cure this, in my opinion. Number one, start winning, because then people stop asking questions. And then number two, I think the easiest move you can make, and I think it's inevitable, just DFA Story, get Meyer up here. If he starts off hot, that'll be a nice distraction. And that's just another thing you can do to kind of shake things up a little bit.
Let me ask you another question. Do you, either of you gentlemen, think at some point Devers acquiesces and ends up playing first base for us at some point?
Oh, I think it's inevitable now. The verbiage today was it'll be an ongoing conversation, but I think it's a done deal. I think Devers knows he has to do it. I think they want Yoshida up, at least for now, because like I said, he'll give you something. You know, Story's giving you nothing. Casas was basically giving you nothing. And maybe Yoshida won't be here long term, but I think in the interim, I think it's viable. And he can't come up unless Devers goes to first. Like, that's the only way. Devers is blocking him.
Well, I think that's what this whole conversation was with Henry going out there. You know, he's obviously a very soft-spoken guy. He's going to try to appeal to Devers from that point of view, you know, and just say, hey, you know, could you play first base for us, you know? And, you know, he's going to probably be like, well, I'll think about it type of thing. And they'll give it a few days to blow over. But like Terry said, you know, Cora said that they weren't going to talk to him about playing first base. It was all over Twitter that, you know, that was his stance. And then today it says, oh, no, we're going to have an ongoing conversation with that. So that script is completely flipped. So I think you're going to see that in the next few days. But to Terry's point, I think, yeah, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I think I want Yoshida back here. And again, you've got the rumors that have said, well, he can't throw, but he can hit. Of course, this is a guy that had a home run on the last day of spring training, then it was put on the IL. So, you know, I don't believe a darn thing that's going on there either. But, you know, be that as it may, Yoshida can hit 145 better than any of these guys. I mean, you got three or four guys in this roster here now that are in your daily lineup. I mean, you have a black hole basically from the seventh down. I love Rafaela. I mean, he's the only guy that I can actually think that he can do anything. And if he can't do it offensively, he's going to do it defensively. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I would do it. I mean, unfortunately, he's left-handed, but I would bring him up. And the DFA of the Story idea, yeah, go ahead and do that. Bring Meyer up. What have you got to lose? I mean, there's nothing more that Meyer, even Anthony, too, have to prove down there.
I'm messing around with the stuff, doing things I don't even mean. But yeah, like Jim said, I don't want Yoshida either. And I've never liked him. But I mean, he'll be competitive against righty at bats. Ref Snyder, if you want him to platoon at DH, can, you know, he has what I think the third highest OPS against lefties since 2021 or something. It was a crazy Nesson stat, but I just feel like once Devers goes to first, I'll tell you what I'd love to see, and this wouldn't happen, but I just think it would be an act of goodwill, and I think it would kind of boost the team. If Bregman went to Devers and said, I'll tell you what, Rafi, I'll go to first base for a couple weeks. You go back to third for a couple weeks, get your reflexes back, get your footwork back. And then, but in between, you know, be taking grounders at first. In a couple weeks, we'll switch back. You'll be ready to play first, and we'll push this team forward. Like, I think that would be a cool thing to do. I want Bregman and Devers to be buddies. And I don't think Devers looks at Bregman like it's your fault, you know, that this all happened. I don't think he puts it on him. I think he understands that's the business side of it, and it just happened. I think his expectations might have been a little bit different, but that had a lot more to do with Breslow. Clearly, Breslow's the bad guy as far as Devers is concerned. But I'd love to see something like that. And I think, you know, a year or two from now, I don't see why Devers will come off of first. I could be wrong. Maybe they'll try to put Costas back there. But if Devers ends up being an average to above average first baseman, I think he keeps it. And then this will just be a minor controversy.
He's going to be above average for this team if he can catch a ball. You know,
yeah.
At this point, it's ridiculous.
He needs to scoop. If he can scoop, then that's everything.
That's his name, Scoop. So I think he should be able to do it.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, give it a break. As far as Bregman, first base, third base, I don't really care if they're friends or not. I just want them to co-quiesce just to make sure that they get on a winning, you know, trend and continue on, because we don't need any of this, you know, drama and soap opera that's going on with all the issues with first base, DH, third base, Bregman, Campbell, this, that, the other thing. You know, hopefully they can figure it out, because, you know, today was a winnable ball game. They couldn't get the offense going. And, you know, if they are going to be looking to be a contender as the rest of this season goes on, they've got to be able to beat good teams. I had a stat on Twitter the other day. I think it was 3 or 4 days ago. They've only got 3 wins against teams above 500, which is ridiculous. And a lot of people are like, well, it's early. At what point do you say it's not early anymore? You were 18-18 at the time against the easiest, softest schedule in the American League. So now you got, you know, you just had Texas. Great. You took 2 out of 3. That's a great positive thing to happen. You just lost this game against Kansas City, which, you know, anybody looking at that game in the third or fourth inning, popping it on, probably thought it was Crochet versus Reagans tonight. I don't think anybody expected it to be like a pitcher's duel from these two guys. So what's going to happen tomorrow? I mean, we're going to get a 3-1 loss probably. But we'll see. Hopefully they win the last two. And Crochet's he's going to have to go deep into that game tomorrow too. Cause I think we used about 48 pitchers tonight. So, they better hope they can get 7 or 8 out of him tomorrow.
One last question for you guys. I would put this under the category of a controversy, the Devers thing. Is this bigger or not as big as the Pedroia Machado controversy? Which one was bigger? Because the fan base is divided. Both of them divided the fan base. So which one do you think was bigger?
I'll go first. Clearly the Pedroia. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Clearly Pedroia, because it was a season. It was a career ending injury. You know, there was a physical injury to Pedroia. There's no physical injury to Rafi. And Machado was the most hated person in Boston for the longest time. And he probably still gets booed. So yeah, that absolutely would be. I mean, it caused a black hole at second base for 8 years.
Well, I guess the aspect of it I was questioning was when Barnes plunked Machado, Pedroia backed Machado for some reason and threw the bullpen under the bus. So well,
He took the high road on that.
Okay. So based on the injury, you would say that one was worse. What do you think, Chris?
I mean, yeah, it's obviously Pedroia Machado, but I also have hindsight on that and also the black hole that it created. I mean, we did have some success as a team after it won a World Series. So, like, at least we had that going for us. I don't know where this goes. So that's the part that's hard to be seen. And it's also so different from the fact that, like, the Red Sox weren't the bad guys. Like, there was no Red Sox that was a bad guy in that situation. We were the victim. I think here where it's internal, like, this has the potential to be more devastating to us from a culture standpoint. Because, yes, we couldn't replace Pedroia. Part of that is the fact that we weren't drafting well. We had no plan, and we just continued to throw out the same garbage and made no effort not to. So that was a lot of self-inflicted wounds. This has a potential, if it doesn't fix itself, to be pretty harmful, I think, to the franchise. So
I think we're on the back end of it. Someone from Twitter weighed in. What's the word on bringing Rizzo back? Rizzo is cooked. I don't even do it. If Romy stays healthy, you know, you're better off there. But yeah. All right. Well, we'll wrap on that. We're going to take Saturday off as we always do. We'll be back Sunday to talk about that game. If anything major happens tomorrow, perhaps we'll cover that one as well. But hope you're enjoying it. It's been a much more interesting week than anyone could have drawn up. So we're at the end of it. Hopefully we can string together some wins here. We got Giolito pitching Sunday, so perhaps just one out of three. But we'll be back with you then. Take care.